हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 62. Sukadev Goswami continued. The newly grown grass made the earth emerald green. The Indragopa insects added a reddish hue. And white mushrooms added further color and circles of shade. Thus the earth appeared like a person who has suddenly become rich. With their wealth of grains, the fields gave joy to the farmers, but those fields created remorse in the hearts of those who were too proud to engage in farming and who failed to understand how everything is under the control of the Supreme. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, the farmer then becomes very happy to see his field full of grain, but the capitalists, who are always unaware of the activities of a supernatural power, become unhappy because they are afraid of a competitive price due to an abundant production. Right? So in a natural environment, if there's more production, if everybody has more production, they're all happy. But when in the capitalist society, they're unhappy when there's
abundance.
Yeah, an abundance. Because then that will mean the prices will go down. Because they work on, what is it?
Demand supply.
Yeah, supply and demand. Like that. So if you have more, if you have more stuff than is needed, means in abundance, then the price goes down. If you have less than what's needed, the price goes up. So capitalists like to have more. So if there's an abundance, I don't know about other places, but I don't know if they still do it, but I know before, like in America, if there's an abundance of anything, they just dump it in the ocean. Like that, to drive the prices up. So it's not that they're functioning on this natural position, because you can see that this is an old thing. We can say, oh no, but this is a, you know, contemporary. No, this was always going on. That's why agriculture and dairy farming then is considered the best occupation, because then you're going to be in tune with nature. You're going to, you know, if you have an abundance, then you do nicely and you're set. You don't need anything else. And then if you have extra, you can trade that for things that you don't have. Right? Because that's the system. If one village, you know, generally develops one thing or produces one thing, abundance they have, they sell to other villages who have something different. Does that make sense? Like sometimes you see, I don't know here, but going up and down the Ganga, then there'll be villages, all they do is pottery. So then they don't, you know, they don't grow, do other things. And so those who don't do pottery, then they take their extra product and then produce and then trade that for pots and vice versa. Right? So it's just everybody having... That's the thing. In the Vedic system, everybody can have more, and it works. And when you have more than what you need, you don't need anything more. So then you can just be happy. Because the whole point of farming is to have enough. But in the capitalistic system, then it's not about having enough. It's how much you can get. It's not how much would be the price. It's how much you can get. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like... One devotee who, this is back in the 80s, so the prices are a little different now. But he worked in perfumes. He made perfumes, sold perfumes. So he said, the bottle costs more than the perfume. A fancy perfume, you know, these really fancy bottles. This was in the 80s. He said, that would be $5-6. Like that. The bottle. And the perfume only costs a couple of dollars. You know, so, you know, $10 or $8, $10, the whole thing. But if you sell it for, let's say, you know, you just make, you know, 20%, you sell it for 12 bucks or stuff, or even 15, they'll think it's a cheap perfume. So people won't buy it. But if you sell it for $80, then they'll think, oh, this is very special, and they'll buy it. He was saying, so all those perfumes, that at that time your top perfumes cost 80 bucks. You know, 60 was, you know, pretty good, but the 20, 30 was, you know, average. But that was what now costs 150 and stuff like that. At that time cost 80. So in other words, now if it's 150, okay, so the whole thing, bottle and perfume, cost you 15. Or maybe 20, but that, does that make sense? So that's the whole point in the capitalistic thing. You have to one will sell it for more because you'll get the maximum you can, and that's how people value it. Yes.
Agriculture is the main occupation for Vaishnavas.
No, cows are the main occupation because, in other words, the cows do the cow stuff and the bulls do the agriculture.
I'm not saying about what's the main. I just say that it's the occupation for the Vaishyas.
Yes.
And usually Vaishya mentality is to get profit.
Yes, but the profit is a bumper crop.
When we talk about that, they didn't want to overdo.
Means he's saying here, thus, okay, but those fields created remorse in the hearts of those who were too proud to engage in farming and who failed to understand how everything is under control of the supreme. So for the farmers getting more, they're happy with that. And every farmer can get more and they're all happy. They're not worried that there's going to be a problem because with grains, they just sit there. You know, you take them, you stick them away, and you use them as you need, and if there's no market now, then, you know, in the future it'll go down, then it'll be there. So, it's, you know, it's just like some deals in cloth or something. You buy the cloth, no one buys it, it just sits there. I remember in one devotee's father's shop, they were like, in their day, they were the biggest shop, cloth shop in their city. You know, so they were well situated. And one day we were sitting in the shop. He showed me a piece of cloth that was 40 years old at the time. This would have been, back in the 80s. So then, and he said he doesn't have a problem with it. Because at some point, it'll come back into fashion. Right? Because, you know, first it's up to date, then it's old fashioned, and then at some point it becomes retro, and at some point it becomes the new thing. Right? So the thing is, yes, at the time, let's say he bought it for, you know, 5 rupees, and then he'll mark the price up and that, you know, sell it for, you know, 8 or 10 or whatever it is, like that. But now, let's say if you're selling it today, what cloth sells for 10 rupees? Right? So now, if this cloth was going to be selling for 300-400 rupees, what's the profit? You bought it for 5. You know, well, now if you want to buy the cloth new, it'll cost you, you know, a few hundred, it'll cost you some hundreds also. You know what I'm saying? So for them, they don't have any problem. But these are older kind of, you know, ways of thinking. So the farmers don't have a problem with surplus. But what he's saying is that those who don't engage in farming, who only do trade or banking, then they don't like that, especially trade, because then dealing in trade, then if there's so much of it, it just means the price goes down, and so you make less profit. Does that make sense? But for the farmer, it's the same amount. You put in X amount of grains, and you get a regular crop, or you get a better crop. But your investment's the same. So you make profit either way. Is that? Yeah, so the idea in the Vedic is everybody can get more. It all goes up together. But that's the difficulty in trade. If they're too proud, then they want more. They become greedy. So they want more than what they should be getting. And so it throws the whole system off. So to do that, for one person to get more means others have to get less. Right? And so it's a weak system. You know, if you can ride the wave, you're doing okay. But if you miss the wave, then you're stuck. So
usually in trading, you know, what sometimes they do is that if the crop is in abundance, then they store it in the storehouse, and then they artificially inflate the price so that, you know, they get the
That's another thing, but that's still the trade people.
Yeah, that's the trade people.
But I'm saying is the farmer is happy to see it. But what we're saying is that the capitalist will be, he will think, oh no, there's too much, so the prices will go down. Because the farmer has it, when it gets to him, then he sells, the trade, he sells it. But if there's less, then he can get more, and if there's more, he'll get less. So they're not happy to see it. In some places, certain capitalists and government restrict the farmer's production of grain, not knowing the actual fact that all food grains are supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like, that was one thing that came up in, it was in the news for when the EU first started. Because before that, every place grew so many things. But once it became the EU, then they restricted that only certain places could grow. So it might have been a local thing that in your country they grew this particular, let's say, that grain or something there. But now the grain's not being grown in your country at all. It's being grown in another country. And so that way then they'll make the profit. Now this, he has to switch to something else or like this. So it was a big problem because of this point. Because they're thinking you'll get more rather than people should have more. Right? The Vedic system is the people should have more. But the capitalist is, no, the capitalist should have more. The people should just have the same. Right? They can produce more, but they should not get more. Because then the difference between what they produce and what you get, that's the profit for the capitalist.
And who controls the capitalist?
Who controls the capitalist is supposed to be the government. But then if the government's controlled by the capitalist, then you got a problem. Like that. Because before, it was that the king is there. Is there any campaign for the king to be king?
No.
Right? It's just his proper training and everything like that. So he's trained. He's born. From the time he's born, he's trained to be the leader. Right? So he goes to the school, he gets the training and this and that. But the modern thing is no, you have to have a whole campaign. That costs you millions of dollars. You know, so for the monarchy, they don't have to worry about that. And they're trained in the Vedic system. In the modern system, you know, it's they don't have to campaign and they're untrained. So then, you know, that doesn't work out any better either. Supposedly it works out better with the modern democratic system, but then they spend so much money that doesn't need to be spent, you know, for their own purpose. Of course, it does add to the gross national product, so indirectly it may help, but the point is that it was about, if there's profit, the people can get that. And then when the people get, then actually taxes will come in, because it's a percentage.
Yes.
So if the people grow more grain, then you get more in tax. Right? So that means for the farmer, he gets better, the government gets better. Who doesn't get better is the businessman. Like that, if he's in trade. Like that. So that's the difficulty. According to the Vedic injunction, Eko Bahunam Yovi Dathati Kaman, the Supreme Personality Godhead maintains this creation. Therefore, he arranges for a supply of whatever is required for all living entities. So, means people do their duties of farming. Whatever comes from that farming, that's what's supposed to be there. And then now it's a matter of distribution, so everybody gets what they require. Right? Because we're looking at it that at any time there's generally some kind of famine going on in some place on the planet. But the point is Krishna has supplied enough facilities for everybody. Sometimes it needs to be distributed a bit, but the point is it's there. Right? So otherwise, what's the meaning of charity if somebody doesn't require it? So instead of dumping things and getting rid of things, you just give it to them. So that would be the thing. You want to maintain your higher price, great. You figure out how much is needed and what's the rest, don't get rid of it. Send it to people who do need it. Because you're not going to make any profit off of them anyway. So then you do some nice charity. So Krishna supplies what's actually needed on the planet. And then we, because we think we're controlling it and all that, then we make a mess of it. Yeah, Eko Bahunam Yovi Dathati Kaman. The Supreme Personality of Godhead maintains this creation. Therefore, he arranges for a supply of whatever is required for all living entities. When there is a population increase, it is the business of the Supreme Lord to feed the people. But atheists or miscreants do not like abundant production of food grains, especially if their business might be hampered. Right? If the business won't be hampered, then it may be okay, but if it's going to be hampered, then definitely it's a problem. Sukadeva Goswami continued, as all creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing. Just as a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, during the rainy season, all living entities in the land, sky, and water become very much refreshed, exactly like one who engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. We have practical experience of this with our students in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Before becoming students, they were dirty-looking, although they had naturally beautiful personal features. Due to having no information of Krishna consciousness, they appeared very dirty and wretched. They were actually technically called dirty hippies, you know, so I guess there's a reason for it, but they, you know, for them it was, that was what you call, that's what you were. Not that it was derogatory, no, that's, you know, it's just like, there's certain terms for, let's say, African Americans, you know, amongst themselves, that's their term. Others can't say it, but, you know, so, yeah. So, dirty hippie. That was at West Coast, dirty hippies. Like that. East Coast, they weren't so dirty, but... Since they have taken to Krishna consciousness, their health has improved. And by their following the rules and regulations, their bodily luster has increased. When they are dressed with saffron-colored cloth, with tilak on their foreheads and beads in their hand, and on their necks, they look exactly as if they had come directly from Vaikuntha. Right? So that's the thing, when you take up devotional service, then naturally, the natural beauty in that's there, because the soul, becoming purified, then has that natural aura. That's what makes the aura in the body. Right? The soul being in a particular attitude, then the subtle body becomes more, and then that increases the beauty. Right? And then that also then affects the gross body. So that whole thing is there. So when the living entity is engaged in Krishna consciousness, that nectar, then one becomes, you know, everything becomes very nice. Just like it's saying, in the rainy season, all the living entities, because of the water, the more water, then all of them, their health improves, they become better looking, and everything gets nice. Does that make sense? Also, just for a side interest sake, that in this here in the English, Prabhupada said, when they are dressed with saffron-colored cloth, right? We catch the point? Prabhupada didn't say the word dhoti. So does that mean they weren't wearing dhotis? They were wearing saffron three-piece suits or saffron togas, or maybe they were wearing saffron samurai outfits, or, you know, or... Does that make sense? Yeah, so you understand? So in the Vedic system, it's understood what you're talking about when you say cloth. Like that. Is that, yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, where the rivers joined the ocean, it became agitated, its waves blown about by the wind, just as the mind of an immature yogi becomes agitated because he is still tainted by lust and attached to objects of sense gratification. Just as devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even when attacked by all sorts of dangers. The mountains in the rainy season were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of the rain-bearing clouds. Right, so you see is that the rain is coming. The clouds are, the mountains are undisturbed. But we see when that water goes rushing down into the ocean, just as it enters into the ocean, then the ocean, the water around where it enters is very agitated and disturbed, so many waves and this and that. So like that, the immature yogis, by an increase in material facility in that, they become distracted. Right? But those who are situated nicely, who are absorbed in the Lord, they don't. They're like the mountains, they're fixed. So... Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, in the rainy season, when the rivers swell and rush to the oceans and seas, they appear to agitate the ocean. Similarly, if a person who is engaged in the mystic yoga process is not very much advanced in spiritual life, he can become agitated by the sex impulse. Although during the rainy season, the high mountains are splashed by torrents of rain, they do not change. Similarly, a person who is advanced in Krishna consciousness, even if put into difficulties, is not embarrassed. A person who is spiritually advanced accepts any adverse condition of life as the mercy of the Lord, and thus he is completely eligible to enter into the spiritual kingdom. Because if any situation that's there, you're always absorbed in the Lord, that being absorbed then is the qualification to be engaged in Krishna service, because that means that Krishna is the central focus of one's attention. Because otherwise, if one's disturbed, means there's Krishna and something else. Or like with the yogis, there is just something else. Right? Not so much Krishna. Like that. So, whatever it is, if it's a good situation, a bad situation, then the devotee, he doesn't become disturbed. That's then the whole idea. Right? And as we see, when you get to the spiritual world, there'll be all kinds of strange things happening, you know, seemingly, and so then, but they're not disturbed. They're always absorbed in Krishna. And so that's their qualification. Yeah. Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, during the rainy season, the roads, not being cleansed, became covered with grass and debris and were thus difficult to make out. These roads were like religious scriptures that Brahmins no longer study, and that thus become corrupted and covered over with the passage of time. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, these covered roads are exactly like a Brahmana who is not accustomed to studying and practicing the reformatory methods of the Vedic injunctions. He becomes covered with the long grasses of Maya. In that condition, forgetful of his constitutional nature, he forgets his position of eternal servitorship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By being deviated by the seasonal overgrowth of long grasses created by Maya, a person identifies himself with a Mayic production and succumbs to illusion, forgetting his spiritual life. Right? So we're not constantly trying to practice Krishna consciousness then and maintain that, then we can get distracted by Maya. So that's the principle that's here. And so the material world, things come and, you know, this comes, then that comes, and, you know, it's everything at once. In English you have a saying, when it rains, it pours. You know, so, you know, it's like if something goes wrong, everything goes wrong, and it's always the same kind of things going wrong, and like that, you know, it would end up in the Wimp's Diary. You know, but it wouldn't be funny. That's the difference, you know. And something be constantly just things with family, or it'll be something to do with work, or it'll be something to do with, you know, something else, you know, the rent or the neighborhood or, you know. Everything, could have, you know, just for variety, everything at once, you know. So in these things, as the modes of nature go through these, then if we're not careful, then we get distracted. And then, you know, we get covered by Maya. Just like these roads, they become covered, right? Because you take a path, right? And so that path is guided by the Brahmins. So when that becomes covered, the path is no longer visible. So then these Brahmins no longer are able to guide people or even themselves. So, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it mean that the person can become covered if they still practice, or they just become agitated, so they continue, but...
It depends on the individual, their own determination. We see some stop, some just become disturbed, you know, some push on, you know. So you have all of that. But the point, the good point is devotional service is never lost. But that still doesn't mean that we should not be careful. You know, why waste time? Like that. So, you know, as a... can't remember who it was. Not sure if it was Charaka or someone else. It was a Brahmin. He was making the point that another birth is easily available. Right? That's not a problem. you're worried about you getting old, and that another birth is easy to get. But he said, whenever you get, but getting good food, now that's rare. So whenever good food comes along, take it. Don't think, oh, I'll get it later. No, take that now. But I'm not sure if it's him or if just someone else making a funny point. But yeah, there's things like that. Even Chanakya might have said. But the point is that these things are hard to get. Getting another birth, that's easy. You know, so. So you don't have to worry about that. So. Like that. So therefore, devotional service is rare. Take it. Right? Because being in the material world and worrying about so many things here, that's standard. Everybody's doing it, so it's not rare. Like that. The devotional service is rare. Take it while it's available. Because after 10,000 years, then the mission of Lord Chaitanya will disappear, and then it'll be down to just hardcore, you know, Kali Yuga. You know, you have to... You know, the 3 foot tall people, but they won't be in pinstripe suits, you know. Like that. Hmm? Sukadeva Goswami continued, though the clouds are the well-wishing friends of all living beings, the lightning, fickle in its affinities, move from one group of clouds to another. Like lusty women, unfaithful even to virtuous men. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, during the rainy season, lightning appears in one group of clouds and then immediately in another group of clouds. This phenomenon is compared to a lusty woman who does not fix her mind on one man. A cloud is compared to a qualified person because it pours rain and gives sustenance to many people. A man who is qualified similarly gives sustenance to many living creatures, such as family members or many workers in a business. Unfortunately, his whole life can be disturbed by a wife who divorces him. When the husband is disturbed, the whole family is ruined. The children are dispersed and the business is closed. And everything is affected. It is therefore recommended that a woman desiring to advance in Krishna consciousness live peacefully with a husband, and that the couple not separate under any condition. The husband and wife should control sex indulgence and concentrate their minds on Krishna consciousness so that their life may be successful. After all, in the material world, a man requires a woman and a woman requires a man. When they are combined, they should live peacefully in Krishna consciousness and should not be restless like the lightning, flashing from one group of clouds to another. And so that being steady, that being stable, that kind of aspect then makes things go nicely, because being in a position where one's dealing with the material phenomena in household life, then the stableness of it then is going to have an effect on one's Krishna consciousness. Right? Because one is doing both. Does that make sense? So for those who are detached from the material facilities, then facilities are better or not doesn't have so much effect. You know, it may have more or less, but it's not going to have as much effect as it will for a grihastha. Right? Like if it's decided, the temple commander says, okay, the brahmacharis aren't sleeping in this room anymore, we're going to make that into this, you guys got to sleep in that room. It's not the end of the world. Like that. You understand? All it is that they just pick up their stuff and move to the next room. It takes about 5 minutes. Right? And if it hasn't, then whatever. It means, in other words, when they go in, they pick up everything the first trip. When they go in, what's left, the temple commander clears it out. So when they come back, it's not there anymore. Because what they took the first time is what they value and what they need, and what the second time, that's actually what they don't require. Yes, for a family, then if that all gets disturbed in that, then things fall apart. Then it creates a real big calamity and affects people's devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's why then in the Vedic system, then these things are taken care of very nicely. So the point is to be Krishna conscious. In other words, a Krishna conscious person remains Krishna conscious. If we are affected by the material facilities, then we take care to engage those material facilities in Krishna's service. Right? And then engaging in service means then it's according to how Krishna likes. Therefore, that's why then the culture is followed in this way. Yes.
We know that stability is something to do with the karma, and sometimes samskaras and all that stuff. And even though a person can be Krishna conscious, it doesn't mean that he will be stable.
No, but then by the last verse, then he'll be unaffected.
But still move.
Yes. Still move. But they're unaffected. Yeah, but that's, it's just like, let us just say, for example, the people that were marching around and blowing on their ram's horns, did they actually, were they personally affected when the walls of Jericho fell over? No. Okay. What about in Sodom and Gomorrah and everyone turned into salt? No. Right? They don't care. So, like that, then they're unaffected. Does that make sense? Yes? Yes, so if they remain in that kind of position, in other words, trying to increase the material only as much as fits within the one's duty, because like you said, it's karma. You put in X amount of time, then you get a certain amount. It's not that by putting in more time, you get more. Because if that was it, okay, let's say somebody's getting, $10,000. But then they figure if I put in a few more hours, then I can get 15. But if you went by that formula, how much would it take to get millions? Right, you have to put in a 1,008-hour day to get. You understand? But the multimillionaires put in the same time. So it's just karma. It means you do your work, you will get how much you're going to get. You're not going to get more by doing more. All it is you take out of time when it should be used for other things. Is that?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Now, how will you explain OT when people do OT?
OT.
Overtime, Western course.
OT, overtime. Yeah. Okay, OT.
A specific amount, like whatever.
Yeah, 1.5. But I'm saying, does it add up to millions? Here it's 1.5, but I don't know. America's 1.5 overtime. Unless they changed it, that's what it was before. But what's the? I didn't catch the point.
I didn't catch what is 1.5 versus before.
1.5. Okay, you do an 8-hour day, and if you get 10 rupees an hour, then you get 80 rupees. But if you do an hour overtime, you get 15 rupees for that hour, not 10. That's 1.5. Is that something? So the point is you only get up to a limited amount. You don't get more. You know what I'm saying? You put in more time, but what I'm saying is, how is the guy making millions? How many hours is he working a day? The same.
Of course not millions.
That's the whole point. Is that it's not by, why we're giving that example. It's not by working more you'll get more. Because someone else is working the same amount of time and getting, because if you do that in inverse, then, the guy who's making millions, you could work it down to how much he gets a minute. You know, he gets, $900 a minute or something like that. So, therefore, for what he actually needs, then he could work, a minute a day and he'd be fine, Like that, if he wants to, be a little more luxurious or have a few parties and work 2 or 3 minutes a day, So that's the thing, is it's not that more time, it's just that you're getting that. You know what I'm saying? Common man, he works, he gets money. Some of these rich guys, they're sleeping, they're getting money. They're doing nothing, they're in the toilet, they're getting money. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then one shouldn't work more than what's required. So you just keep what you just do that much which is required to keep the family and your sadhana and things steady in devotional service. And that much is all you need. You want more than that, it means it's got to come out of somewhere. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's like, let's say, you have 3 people, they sit down to a meal, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody gets 1 bowl of rice. Okay? Now, if one person wants more rice, where does it come from? The other two people. Or they both gang up on one. But whatever it is, you know, it's just how you say. You know, so the family and the business gang up on the sadhana, you know. So, you know, that's a common one. Right?
The difficulty seems to be with the devotees is that we're not trained to give 100% in anything. So instead of, you know, doing our work properly, we just spread it, as you mentioned, and do whatever mishmush we can do,
right.
And then we're waiting for the results,
right.
And the results are not coming.
Yeah.
So we're frustrated, and then we say, okay, it's karma, I can't get any more, then the family members and this and that, they're not exactly happy with this, but then, so that's what happens, and then the devotees, they blame it all on the circumstances, karma, ultimately Krishna, because it's his fault.
Yeah, of course, it's his fault we chose to come to ignore him and come to the material world, right?
Yeah, because we didn't come from Bala. That's the ultimate.
Yeah, why would we get that? I've even heard people, why did Krishna make us this way? So we could, but we're Tathastam. He's just like, you have day, you have night, so then there's the twilight. Right? It means that it's not that it's a bright daylight and then bang like that the lights go off. No, there's that gradual. So we're the twilight. You have the internal, you have the external, you have the twilight. So that's the Tathastam, us. So then some will complain, why did he make us that way? You know, why didn't he make us so we were perfect? You know, it's always like you're saying, why doesn't he do? Why not? So it is a how you say? A common point that if things don't go right, we tend to blame Krishna. But with training, so that's the idea. Prabhupada's talking about this training. He's talking about the right attitude. Because if you can adjust the attitude, then one will start to get effect. But if you adjust the attitude only, then you can start to get something. So if it means you're trying to do your duties, you're trying to put in your effort, you're trying to use your intelligence, you're seeing what was recommended, what others who are successful, what are they doing, talk to, you know, like this, you can start to work it out. It may take you years, but it starts to work. But if we do like what you said, sit back, then what's going to work? You know, you'll get from whatever comes from the past, but, you know, what about getting something further?
So then according to this description, it sounds like the situation we are in, it's exactly what is our conditioning. Because some people more determined, some people less determined.
Yes.
And even in training, as we talk, only some people can be trained in certain things.
Yes.
Other people, they just don't have that kind of an ability.
No, but everybody can be trained to be Krishna conscious. And everybody can be trained to do their duties.
Yeah.
You know, unless they're outcasts or something, and then that's another thing. But you know, no devotees are from an outcast background, so of course, because they're also perfect, so. Like that. Right? Because all Western things are as good, if not better, than the Indian stuff, so then everybody's on an equal footing, and
just afraid to say it. Because then, from both sides.
Yeah. No, the point is your nature is what you have from your previous work. But if you take that and engage it in Krishna's service, then it comes to its best platform. So you can get the best you can get from it. So now there's two aspects of best. One is the material results, and the other is the spiritual. So the spiritual result, that's where everybody can get the same. Because if you're fully engaging your nature in Krishna's service, body, mind, and words, even though the activities that you can do are small, and someone else it's big, it doesn't matter for Krishna. You know, like the example of Ramachandra, you know, with the monkeys and the spider. So that's not what it is, because they're both fully absorbed. You know, if the monkeys were, you know, knocking dust into the ocean, then that wouldn't be very pleasing. right? Because the spider's already doing that. You know, mountaintops, that's what they can do. So they're fully... So in that way, but the results of what you can produce, that you might see some difference. But the point is if we're satisfied with whatever we get through the performance of our duties, then we can all have the same, because we can say, no, but I would want more. But the point is if you're on that principle of whatever I have, I want more, the person who's making more will be thinking the same thing. So it's not that, well, how come he's getting more and I can't have that? Because he's thinking, why am I only getting this? I made $1 million, why didn't I make 10? The guy who makes 10, why didn't I make 100? The guy who's making 100, why am I not making $1 billion? So there's, if one's not satisfied, then you're in the same position. The rich man is just as much in anxiety about money as the poor man. Just his situation of being in anxiety is better. You know, the poor man's standing on the corner waiting for the bus in anxiety about money, and the rich guy's riding around in his Rolls Royce and he's in anxiety about money. But the experience is the same. That's the point. So therefore, for the devotee, whatever their conditioning is, take that, engage in Krishna's service. Then being purified, it will be functioning at its best. And then being satisfied with that, then life goes on. Somebody lives simply, someone has more. It's just whatever works for them. Desiring more than what you can produce is never going to be a benefit to anybody. Because whatever you're getting, then someone else has more. And whatever you have that you think is not enough, someone else would love to have that much. You know, it's just like, what is it? That goof on who's got the worst situation. One guy's saying, yeah, you know, we were there, there was, you know, how you say, 20 of us crammed into a small little house. And the other guy goes, you had a house? Like that, there was 20 of us crammed into, you know, just into a shed. And the other guy goes, what, a shed? You know, we were just, you know, sitting there on the pavement. What, you had a place to sit down? They know, we, you know, it's just like that. So that's the, it just keeps going. Like that. You know. Or the guy says, yeah, but our roof had holes in it, so it leaked. We had to hold up umbrellas. And the other guy says, you had umbrellas? You know, like that. You know, so it just keeps going. So whatever position we're in, there's someone better, there's someone worse. So if we're satisfied with our position, we'll be fine. Because the guy who's poor thinks, if he would just had how much we had, and we think we're poor. We think we had as much as that guy who's rich, and he's thinking, if I had as much as the next guy. So there's no end to it. Does that make sense? So that's why then Krishna recommends, perform your duty, and do it for Krishna, and be satisfied with whatever the outcome is. Then, if Krishna, because of your devotion, wants to adjust it, then that's up to him. But if you're going to function on your own karma, that this is me and I'm doing this and I have to do this and I'm being practical and all that, then you might just get just what is your karma. Because you want to do it yourself, okay, go for it. Is that... Yeah. So it still comes back to the proper attitude and qualities that are recommended to perform the duties. Because that's the real point. It's not what you're doing. You say, no, but times have changed. We can't live in that ideal. But the point is it's not the facility that's there. It's the attitude. That's the main thing. So in other words, the devotion to Krishna, that can always be 100% there at all times, places, or circumstances. Having the proper attitudes and all that, that also can pretty much be always there. Whether you can use them or not is another thing, but you can have them. Now, the particular facilities of the situation you're in, that may change according to a better or worse. But what's being recommended is being Krishna conscious with the right attitude. And that's there, that can be steady. But the other things, it's temporary, it's material, it will always change anyway. You can't expect it to be stable. Even with, the grihastha is supposed to work for a stable environment, but that it will be stable, that you can't guarantee. Okay. Because otherwise, then what we're practicing is Jaimini's philosophy. I did the work, I deserve the results. But the point is no, you did the work, you'll get results according to whatever you're actually supposed to get, not what you say you're supposed to get. I did the work now, but what you forget, it's just like, let's say the man does his work, and, he's supposed to get 100 rupees after the work. And then the boss hands them 75 rupees. He says, no, I did 100 rupees worth of work. And then the boss says, yes, you did get 100 rupees worth of work. And I'm paying you 100 rupees for your work. But what you're forgetting is you borrowed 200 rupees and you have to pay it back. And the agreement is 25 rupees a week. So therefore, you only get 75. So once that 200 is paid off, then you get 100. So by my work now, I will say I should get this much, but we don't know what the past is. So that's why that aspect you can't focus on. You do that the best you can, but the focus is on the Krishna conscious with the right attitude. Because that you can have control of. Means, in other words, you can make that endeavor. Krishna will give the result. Will give the results. But on the other, that's just what's going to be useful. That makes sense. Yeah.
I just we moved into another apartment today, and these two were carriers. When they had carried up everything on the sixth floor, they just were going around in all the rooms, and they were like so happy, and they were starting asking, are you going to have your family here, and your father and mother, and who more is coming here? And
yeah, and then you just tell them, yeah, about 20, 30 more people.
They were just so happy. And when I said prasad, and should we sit down and celebrate now? And I was just like so moved by their innocence and just their good will, like just normal carriers of the Holy Dham. It was just so touchy in that.
That's because that's culture. You just appreciate and things like that.
But this attitude, you know, doesn't matter what you have.
You have that, you're happy. Because that's the whole thing, is that you always have these typical stories of the wealthy person who's completely bummed out and the poor person who's completely happy. So you always will have that. And so it's all an attitude. It means nowadays, that, you know, as we discussed before, the capitalists, they're going to make it that, no, you can't be happy unless you have, you know, I say, if you don't have this car or this suit or this phone or this computer, you can't be happy. And if you have them, you will be happy. But it's not actually. See, it's the difference. What you can say is, no, but things have changed and that you need more money. But no, it's that we need things that we don't need. And the things you need don't cost much. You know, potatoes, rice, dal, you know, cumin seeds like this, salt, they don't cost so much. But all the other things that we need that we don't need, that costs a lot. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the funny thing. So that's then where that previous point comes in. So the Vedic is people just this what they require is what they have, and then before is all these natural things were easily available. Now some of them are so expensive because they're so rare, but before then they were just taken as a normal thing. They were just standard stuff. You know, it's just like, what do you call it? You know, Bengali cooking. Just coconut goes, if you have a lunch, there's coconut in something. There'd be posta in something. There'd be danyapata in something. There would be all these things that we would now say are unique things. They were just standard stuff before. But because then the farming doesn't become the main, this, that, you have to drive up the price to make profits, then it becomes less of it, and then people don't use it anymore. You know, it's just standard stuff. You know. It's just like, if you're in other parts of the world, saffron's very expensive, and you use it very rarely in special things, but in Iran, where it's from, then that's the normal. You put that in rice. When you cook the rice for lunch, you put saffron in it. You know, it's just one of the things you do. But, you know, if they get into the making money off of it rather than just the tradition, then now it'll be expensive. You know, like you were saying, what was it, the quinoa? Like that. That was the cheap food over there. But now, because then the Westerners are willing to pay about, a 100,000 times the price that they will locally, so now it's very expensive. The locals there don't eat quinoa anymore. It's too expensive. So that the Russians eat, so they probably eat tapioca. And then when people figure out tapioca is a superfood, then I don't know what they'll be eating.
Right? Poor guys.
Ah, okay. Yes, so we're good. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the curved bow of Indra, the rainbow, appeared in the sky, which had the quality of thundering sound, it was unlike ordinary bows because it did not rest upon a string. Similarly, when the Supreme Lord appears in this world, which is the interaction of the material qualities, he is unlike ordinary persons because he remains free from all material qualities and independent of all material conditions. During the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illuminated by the moon's rays. Similarly, the living beings in material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego, which is itself illuminated by the consciousness of the pure soul. So, Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. In the rainy season, the moonlight is covered by clouds, but is visible at intervals. It sometimes appears that the moon is moving with the movement of the clouds, but actually the moon is still. Due to the clouds, it also appears to move. Similarly, for one who has identified himself with the moving material world, his actual spiritual luster is covered by illusion. And with the movement of material activities, he thinks he is moving through different spheres of life. This is due to false ego, which is the demarcation between spiritual and material existence, just as the moving cloud is the demarcation between moonlight and darkness. Right? So that the cloud, that's the ignorance or the false ego. So that's the thing, is that what makes the difference between spiritual life and material life is false ego. False ego? Yeah. So the point is you change from false ego to I'm servant of Krishna, a real ego, then it's spiritual life. And if we think, no, I am this body, we are Westerners, we do this, do that, you know, we can't do all this, you know, Hare Krishna stuff, then that's material. Not that saying, no, we're devotees, we're doing all the nice things, and not about maintaining the false ego. Yes, but the point is then what position of devotion? It drops. Because when we keep material identity, that keeps it within the material realm. And then whatever little, you know, Krishna consciousness we add to that, that's nice, of course. But at the same time, as we have to understand, is that holding on, that attachment to that false identity, that's a problem. Having false ego, that's not actually the problem, because by chanting it will go away. But being attached to it and identifying with it, so that's the problem.
Kamaj, is this like a transition, going from the false identity to the identity of the servant, or is it a process like that can fluctuate in your...
It may fluctuate, because that's why it mentions in Anartas, then they go through the first, is that we start something and make a little bit of progress. So compared to what was before, it's just like how many letters does a kid who doesn't know how to read know? Right? Zero. So you first go to school, and then they teach you three or four letters on the, you know. So now you think you're a big scholar, because you actually know hundreds or thousands of times more, millions of times more than what you knew before. So they become very enthused. Right? But then as you get into it, and then you see, you just start slowly adding. then they go through a position where then one day they're enthused, one day they're not. One day they're enthused, one day they're not. Right? Does that make sense? Then it comes to the point where they try to rationalize material attachments. Right? And then when they get beyond that, then they decide to be serious about Krishna consciousness. And sometimes they do well and sometimes not, but they're serious. Then they get to the point where, being situated in that seriousness, now they're engaged in devotional activities, but whether they can perform those devotional activities always as they plan or not. If, you know, like you get up, you know, before you go to sleep, okay, I'm getting up at midnight and I'm going to chant 64 rounds before Mangalartik and, you know, 3 lakhs by, you know, midnight when Krishna, you know, we have the Abhishek for Krishna and all this kind of thing. And then, you know, you hear some noise outside and you look at your watch and it's 6 in the morning. Right? So, yeah, it didn't quite work out. But, you know, you're determined. Then you get upset, get up, then you start chanting. Okay, then. Does that make sense? So that's then the sixth stage is that you are able to do what you want to do. You get the results and it's going very nicely. The secondary goes very well in Krishna consciousness. You know, the fifth means you're Krishna conscious, but the secondary doesn't go so well. The sixth platform is your consciousness is good and the facility, the results are going well. But if you become then distracted by the results that you get and become proud of that, then again we cover. Does that make sense? So it has these six levels. Does that make sense? So basically different, each individual will be at a different stage in different aspects. Some might be very steady in prasad, but not so steady in chanting, or steady in chanting, but, you know, drive you nuts during prasad, or, you know, different things like that. Or
yeah, because when I, like, observe the Vaishnava Shayas, they are just, like, to me, like, on a completely different platform, like, on a place where...
That's why they're acharyas.
So then, but... So, it's possible, like, for a devotee to get on that type of platform without being...
That's why it's acharya. They're showing you what you can do.
But, like, a woman can get on that platform, or someone who's, like... I was relating, like, acharya to being maybe sannyasi, but that's not... An acharya doesn't have to be a sannyasi, then. Is that...
Although everyone is blissful when Krishna entered the village, the bliss of Jashoda with her strong parental affection was outstanding. Now in this verse, the bliss of the gopis headed by Srimati Radharani is described as Krishna entered the village. To experience a moment as 100 yugas is the quality of Aniruddha Mahabhava, the highest state of prema. After proceeding through rati, prema, sneha, mana, pranaya, raga, anuraga, bhava, and mahabhava, according to, it means after getting through that, according to Ujjwala Nilamani, the gopis such as Radha possess this type of mahabhava, which is above the standard mahabhava. So does that answer your question? You're not connecting the dots here. You said, can a woman get to that position? It means most all the women we read about are in that position. But it doesn't mean the external activities are necessarily going to be the same.
Yeah, I guess I was just connecting acharya with sannyasi. But acharya is just someone who follows...
Acharya, in this case, what we're talking about, what you mentioned, then they are the one who sets the standard in the sampradaya. But everybody can, you know, by their example, then be something to follow. You understand? It's not about the externals, it's about the consciousness. So everybody can be on that level of consciousness.
Get to an acharya, then that means you're in the mood of serving. You're like this.
That we're taking up devotional service and we're committed to that and fixed in devotional service, that steadiness in devotional service, then that makes one into a pure devotee. Right? So then And then the acharyas, they're the ones that show how to become a pure devotee. So we don't have to become an acharya, we have to follow in the footsteps of an acharya. So we're not trying to imitate the acharya, we're trying to follow in the footsteps. So, understand? So anybody can follow in the footsteps, and anybody can therefore come to the platform of pure devotion. Is that? Yeah. So the point being is that false ego is the juncture between the two. So having a philosophy based on false ego is not a good philosophy. It means it's material. Right? It's not that, no, it's not material, you're not understanding and this and that, but that's what the Prabhupada says here. False ego is the demarcation between spiritual and material. So when we're acting based on I'm servant of Krishna, that's spiritual. When we're acting based on I am this body, then that means it's material. That makes sense. So in the beginning, we may go back and forth, but the point is that since we know that false ego is not the standard, we're trying to give that up, and so then we move forward. It doesn't mean that you can't identify what kind of body, mind, and intelligence you have. And so therefore you can use it in Krishna's service. But that means you're looking at it not from the position of false ego. You know what I'm saying? Because if we say, okay, I'm American. Now the point is, but where did Americans come from? So unless you're Iroquois, Cherokee, Navajo, or, you know, the like that, you didn't come from there. Right, that's you could say probably pretty much 100% proven fact. Right, it's not that when the settlers went across America on their wagon trains and then they bumped into these really old, you know, white colonies that had been there for, you know, thousands of years and everything like that. And where are you from? And said, you know, like that. You know, yeah, we came over with the Vikings, you know, like that, you know. So yeah, you don't find that. No. Is that so? So therefore, then they can't say that it's there. So if they adapted to America, then they're in Europe. They're all over the world. They adapt everywhere. So then, what's the problem in adapting? That's what American means. You can adapt to anything. If you're from Europe, you don't adapt to just everything. You know, you watch it, you see it, you're comfortable with it. Americans, they just jump in. That's what makes them American. They decide, I like Hare Krishna, so it's just 100% Hare Krishna. If anything else you did before, out the window. No other community in the world will do that.
That's an advantage for Americans.
It's an advantage. But then when they use it in the opposite, then it's a disadvantage, not only for them, but also the rest of the world. Right? Because according to Americans, they set the standard for the world. So if they're doing it, everyone should be doing it. If they're not doing it, no one should do it. So that's the problem. Right? So if we identify in this way, then it's a problem. But even if we identify this way, if you look at it logically, then that means it would be the easiest for you of any community in the world to adjust to another culture. Nobody else can do that. Everybody else worries about that and waits and stuff like that. Like Prabhupada said, the Chinese, they'll be the last to come, but they'll be the best. You know? Because they all of their heritage and this and that, and they already have an old tradition. So why? Americans, the country's 200 years old. Like that, you know, it's like that. And culture, every 5-10 years, it's a new culture. So it's not like you have some kind of heritage going on. They're saying, so it's actually the easiest for them. So when they complain that, oh, we, you know, we're Westerners, we can't do this, that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. They're the only ones that can just do it.
Mm-hmm. Once we explain that all the yatras in the world are started by Americans,
yeah,
and their quality, that the maverick.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's why they don't like the rules, because they should be able to do whatever they want. You know, so they're sometimes good at pioneering, but once it gets to the point of settling down and becoming cultural and traditional, that's when they'll have a weakness, right? Unless they're from a background that appreciates the old world, and you have plenty of those also. Then you can get into culture. But if you're from those who wouldn't know culture if it came around and you know, slapped you in the face or something, then you'll have more of a problem. But if you're Krishna conscious, it doesn't matter. Like that. Is that understanding? You know, the bull in the china shop still is, you know, a bull. They're doing bull stuff. Just they happen to be in a china shop, so it's not so good. If you take them outside, they're great. The BBT purport elaborates, not realizing that the false ego merely hampers and dulls our real spiritual consciousness, which is fully enlightened and blissful. We mistakenly think that material consciousness is full of knowledge and happiness, right? Because we think it's Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma, right? And then here we also then think there's knowledge instead of ignorance. This is comparable to thinking that the luminous clouds are lighting up the night sky. Well, in fact, it is the moonshine that illuminates the sky, and the clouds that merely dull and hamper the moonshine. The clouds appear luminous because they are filtering and impeding the brilliant rays of the moon. Similarly, at times, material consciousness appears pleasurable or enlightened because it is screening or filtering the original blissful and enlightened consciousness coming directly from the soul. So that's where we'll make the mistake. We'll think that something in the material world is of advantage and is actually nice, is real knowledge, is real happiness. But that's only because it is filtering the actual knowledge and consciousness of the soul. Does that make sense? Sukadeva Goswami continued. The peacocks became festive and cried out a joyful greeting when they saw the clouds arrive. Just as people distressed in household life feel pleasure when the pure devotees of the infallible Supreme Lord visit them. The trees had grown thin and dry, but after they drank the newly fallen rainwater through their feet, their various bodily features blossomed. Right? So here, that's Krishna's mystic power. Trees eat through their feet. So, yeah. Similarly, one whose body has grown thin and weak from austerity again exhibits his healthy bodily features upon enjoying the material objects gained through that austerity. The cranes continued dwelling on the shores of the lake, although the shores were agitated during the rainy season. Just as materialistic persons with contaminated minds always remain at home, despite the many disturbances there. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, sometimes it is seen that cranes and ducks meander continually on the banks of the lakes and rivers, although the banks are filled with muddy garbage and thorny creepers. Similarly, persons who are householders without Krishna consciousness are constantly tarrying in material life in spite of all kinds of inconveniences. In family life or in any life, one cannot be perfectly happy without being Krishna conscious. Srila Narottam Das Thakur prays that he will have the association of a person, either a householder or a man in the renounced order of life, who is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord and is always crying the holy name of Lord Chaitanya. I wonder if we just put up walls there. Would that block the sound?
Yeah, we were thinking, you know, soundproof wall. But even, you know, like a normal wall up to a certain height, that will proof the sound. Because this road seems to be like super busy.
Yeah, it is. It's more than be before. Like that. Yeah, way more than before. Before it was always quiet. Now and again you get a bunch of like school kids going by and yelling at school.
They should just close the room.
Yeah, just go around.
Yeah.
Build a new road around on that side. I say, go through Nityananda Kutir and then come around the back. There is a back road, you know, from the school. Smith comes down around.
Yeah. But this road connects temple with Goshala, so this is the main traffic.
Yeah.
Because people go there and come
back. You're saying they go down, turn right, then go down, then turn, and then come back, and, you know, get more of a tour.
They will find their way.
Yeah, I have to figure out something. It's just really ridiculous. Or even putting inside walls. Or
there's no glass.
Hmm?
West will have always somebody's looking in. You know, they usually put glass.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but I'm saying on the inside. Oh, that's an idea. You could actually put that heavy glass. No. I'm saying you have the wall, and then you have the glass. But I'm just saying, you'd have that heavy, thick, you know, like they do in stores.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how the birds will do, but so I don't think they can see glass. I see bonk.
If it's dirty, maybe manage.
Tinted glass. Rose-colored glass. Yes, so therefore, then Narottam Das Thakur is praying that he maybe have the association of any devotee who's sincere. So it doesn't matter if they're householders or renunciates. The point is, if someone's sincere in Krishna consciousness, that's the real point. For a materialist and other householders, then it'll be contaminating. There'll be some upliftment in the way of going from karma to jnana if they associate with those who are renounced, but still they'll stay within the material sphere. But if one takes up devotional service, then that's good association for anyone in any situation. Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Indra sent forth his rains, the floodwaters broke through the irrigation dikes in the agricultural fields. Just as in the Kali Yuga, the atheist false theories break down the boundaries of Vedic injunctions. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. The barriers around an agricultural field sometimes break due to heavy torrents of rain. Similarly, the unauthorized atheistic propaganda in the age of Kali breaks the boundary of the Vedic injunctions. Thus, people gradually degenerate to godlessness. Because it's from religious position, it's easy to get to transcendence. But from an irreligious, then one doesn't see actually, because the ignorance becomes more, and the position of authority becomes less, one sees less the importance of actually devotional service. So the two don't go together. Does that make sense? You know, it's like putting, let's say, tigers and sheep together and saying, oh, but everyone's equal, we should all get along, wouldn't it be wonderful? It's not going to work.
Some religious claim will work.
And how is it working out? Oh, yeah, but I'm just, that's my point, is they say that...
That's what they aspire for.
Yes, but they're trying to make the material world perfect, but it won't be. So the whole point is those who are spiritualists and those who are atheists, they won't get along. So the spiritualists should associate with spiritualists. Now, by good fortune, if the atheist can get that association and somehow or another find the value in it, then they can adjust themselves and improve. But it's not that because atheism is prominent, therefore, then we take it and say that it becomes an integral part of devotional service. Is that because we may take facilities people use, but we don't take the mentality that they use, because the mentality is false ego. And false ego is immediately material. But if we have a devotional attitude, you can use facilities. But the point is it always has to remain at, you know, so therefore if we're saying, yes, we're using all the modern things in Krishna's service, so therefore we don't need the Vedic, but then why do they say we're Westerners, that's why we're using it? Is that what I'm saying? You know, so that's the... Sukadeva Goswami continued, the clouds impelled by the winds release their nectarian water for the benefit of all living beings. Just as kings instructed by their Brahmin priest disperse charity to the citizens. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, in the rainy season the clouds tossed by the wind. Wow, that is amazing. I saw clouds as about to see clouds. The eye moves on to toss. Then I just took the T, and when I was about to say clouds, I put the T on the front. Okay, in the rainy season, the clouds tossed by the wind deliver water, which is welcome like nectar. When the Vedic followers, the Brahmins, inspire rich men, like kings and members of the wealthy mercantile community, to give charity in the performance of great sacrifices, the distribution of such wealth is also nectarian. The four sections of human society, namely the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, are meant to live peacefully in a cooperative mood. This is possible when they are guided by expert Vedic Brahmins, who perform sacrifices and distribute wealth equally. So he sees the basis is that it has to be on this. The Vedic principles show us how we can, one, how to be Krishna conscious and how to live a life that's compatible for Krishna consciousness. So when we follow that under the guidance of authority, things go very nicely. And if we don't, then it doesn't go very nicely. There's too many lights, right? Okay, verses 25 to 31, Krishna's pastimes during the monsoon. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that now the description of the rainy season has been completed. A description of Krishna's pastimes in the monsoon forest is described in 7 verses. Sukadeva Goswami continued. When the Vrindavan forest had thus become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits, Lord Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, and accompanied by Sri Balaram, entered that forest to enjoy. Srila Sanatan Goswami elaborates. Though Vrindavan is the shelter of all seasons with a wealth of flowers and fruits at all times, at this time the forest was even more abundant with dates and jambu fruits. Krishna was surrounded by the boys because they wanted to protect him from the rain, each trying to cover him with their umbrella. The cows surrounded him with satisfaction, flowing with milk, having more affection for him than for their calves, as if offering him their milk. Attracting all minds, Harihi, since he was surrounded by everyone, greedy for the beauty of his face, he entered the forest and remained there because of the beauty of the forest, Pravishat. There is also the hint that he did this every day during the rainy season. Yeah, so when he says, at this point when it was like this, which it would be for the whole rainy season, then Krishna entered. So it says he's hinting at that, then this is a daily pastime. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the cows had to move slowly because of their weighty milk bags, but they quickly ran to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he called them, their affection for him causing their udders to become wet. The Lord saw the joyful aborigine girls in the forest, the trees dripping sweet sap, and the mountain waterfalls, whose resounding indicated that there were caves nearby. When it rained, the Lord would sometimes enter a cave or the hollow of a tree to play and to eat roots and fruits. The BBT purport states, Srila Sanatan Goswami explains that during the rainy season, bulbs and roots are very tender and palatable, and Lord Krishna would eat them along with wild fruits found in the forest. Lord Krishna's young friends would sit in the hollow of a tree or within a cave and enjoy pastimes while waiting for the rain to stop. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home, in the company of Lord Sankarsana and the cowherd boys, who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water. And so some nice place where they could sit, because before they would sit on the grass, but now it'll be muddy, so now they're sitting on this big, large stone. So you have these areas like that. Yogamaya arranges like that. Yeah. Also, is that they're waiting for the rain to stop means it would stop. Because normally the thing is it'll be there clear, and then the clouds will come in, it'll rain, and then they'll stop raining and then move on, and then they'll clear, so then they can do that. So when it rains, then they'll go inside, hide somewhere, and then when it's not raining, then they can come out. Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates, the food brought with them, packed by Yashoda, was brought close by the boys at the appropriate time, or was offered by each of them as a gift to Krishna, because it was plentiful and sweet. He ate on a stone plate, since the food was liquid with plentiful yogurt, because the stone became beautiful after being cleansed by the showers. He ate near the water, since they ate together on one stone plate. He made them sit down in one place. Balaram made them come together as one, Sankarsana, right, because he attracts together, since the two boys were not separate from the other cowherds. Footnote 24. It is also explained by Srila Sanatana Goswami that this verse could also mean that each boy had his own stone plate, as they all sat with Lord Balaram in the center. Krishna served them the various preparations. After everyone was satisfied, Lord Krishna would then eat. Yeah. So it was a very standard thing before that stone plates were used, because stone is considered more pure than gold. So it would be a very standard thing, because we will think of it that no, gold's the opulence and this like that, but actually the stone is more pure. You know, that's why you see altars of stone and things like that, the temples of stone, because it's actually more pure than gold.
Didn't Saraswati Thakur in Chaitanya Math have the stone plate of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur where he used to eat on the stone plate?
Oh, the stone plate. Prabhupada also had stone plates. Like that. And before, they were much more common. Nowadays, I think you can buy them outside the front gate on the road, but a lot of that is cement. It's not actually stone. Stone plates and stuff you can get from the places that sell actual stone stuff. You know, like the grinding stones and things like that, many times they have them, but you have to be careful. Before it was just standard stuff.
Okay. Any stone?
Any stone.
Is there some kind of specific stone the scriptures advise?
So you're asking about the principle that the poet is mentioning how everybody's got to get stoned or something, so you're trying to figure out where does everybody get this stone, or what kind of stone, or
like the stone has the highest purity,
yes,
for eating, so any stone will do.
Any stone, yeah, the one you picked up out of the mud, yeah, anything like that, yeah. You have to wash it off first. The point is just there's certain standard stone that they use for making the plates. They'll use that, they'll sometimes use marble. Marble's just a fancier one, but it's still stone. But generally black stone is what's the common thing. Okay, so here he's mentioning that they ate on a large stone near the water. Is that the plate that they would use? Either it means they had one big plate and so many would sit around and eat, or it would be each kid had their own stone plate. So it seems stone plates are the common thing. So.
Krishna ate a lot of times rice and yogurt.
Yeah, rice and yogurt.
So, is it South India?
Delhi in South India, it is the...
Yes, but we see that he wasn't eating it without achar. So that's the slight difference. But yes, the main principle of eating rice with yogurt as an important part of lunch, then you can see where South Indians would have gotten it from. So in that way, then they're doing very well. Because like here it mentions that, the yogurt and the rice... And Lord Brahma's pastime, the yogurt and rice, so it's a pretty standard, you know. Because the thing is yogurt you can eat like at noontime. You don't eat it in the evening. You can also eat it in the morning if it's warm. But if it's cold, then you wouldn't. You would only eat it at noon. But even in the winter, you would eat it at noontime. So, yeah. So we always hear about his lunch. Noontime when he's out. And here we see also then Krishna serving nicely and all that, and then when they're all satisfied, then he would eat. So you have these, you know, different ways he would have pastime. Sometimes they're all sitting together and sharing, sometimes they're eating together, sometimes he's serving them, and then seeing that they're all happy. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna watched the contented bulls, calves and cows sitting on the green grass and grazing with closed eyes. And he saw that the cows were tired from the burden of the heavy milk bags, thus observing the beauty and opulence of Vrindavan's rainy season, a perennial source of great happiness. The Lord offered all respects to that season, which was expanded from his own internal potency. Oh, same guys. Well, maybe
I think they have a net up there and just keep falling on you all the time.
Oh, okay. Well, they're nowhere else?
Yeah, they're here too.
Okay. Plus, it could be just the lights are so bright, and so they attract them.
It is a symptom that it's going to rain someday.
These guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to rain.
Rain. Okay. Come.
So it's reading about the rainy season. So. The only thing, it doesn't mention that Krishna had these bugs. So. Mm-hmm. They did mention the Indragopas were walking around. So it mentioned they're red. Indragopas are red.
Yeah.
That they seem to be bigger.
Small red bugs.
Yeah.
You've seen them?
Ladybugs?
I don't know. I saw one on the path yesterday walking. Big, huge, red, long kind of thing with big legs. I've never seen it before. It's the first time. It's walking across the road.
Oh, that one is different.
That's different.
Yeah, okay.
Indragopa is a small one.
Yeah, I would think it's a small one.
They have bugs and they have mosquitoes and it's huge.
Yeah, they have bugs, but they don't bother you. See, bugs are fine as long as they don't bother you, right? Like bees, they have bees. They had the Brahmaras. Seen those kind of bees? They're big, but they're not the fuzzy ones. They're outside. They have like a shell, like other bugs. They're kind of flat, very big. But their wings are the same size as all the other ones, so they don't fly so good. I mean, they'll get off the ground, they'll start flying and they'll go, but if they bump into something, they just fall over. You know, if they bump into each other, sometimes they go like this and they bump into and they bump down on the ground. They get back up again. So if scientists are bewildered by regular bees that they've seen, they wouldn't understand these guys at all. Yeah, so there's fish bugs, but they add to the nice atmosphere. Nice bugs. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, he was proud to see the beauty of the forest due to the rainy season, which was nothing but the manifestation of his own energy. At such times, Krishna would praise the nature's special activities during the rainy season. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the material energy or nature is not independent in its actions. Nature is acting under the superintendence of Krishna. This is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, which states that material nature, known as Durga, is acting as the shadow of Krishna. Whatever order is sent from Krishna, material nature obeys. Therefore, the natural beauty created by the rainy season was acted out according to the indications of Krishna, who thus felt very proud of material nature's beautiful activities. Right, so she's working under his direction and is coming out so beautiful. So that means the source is him. Right? But him being proud is not a problem. Okay? Because then it's his energies, which are the devotees. And so then they're doing such a nice arrangement to please him. Kind of. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand.
Hare Gaura.